the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to another edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler, and, well, we do call this program Lifetime Income because, well, as we retire, retired people are totally dependent upon their income from investments. And ever since we went through the great crash back in 2008 and the recession, the vast majority of investors have been putting their money into bond funds versus stock funds. Now, however, we see that the Fed is raising interest rates. And so what does this mean? We're going to talk about the complications of all of the money that has gone into bond funds now that the Fed's actually raising rates and what kind of a dilemma this creates.
You know, it was rather interesting. We follow fund flows, and especially after the Great Recession, because, you know, you think about it, John, people that were retiring in the last decade, they saw two bear markets, a major bear market in 2000 to 2002, and then it was repeated 5 years later from 2007 to 2009. So having gone through a bear market in stocks, where stocks went nowhere for 13 years, basically, and people lost anywhere from 40 to 50%, maybe even more if you were in tech stocks in the year 2000. So when the market began to recover in 2009 and the Fed announced quantitative easing, from 2009 to 2013, the first half of 2013, literally, I think it was $1.5 trillion went into bond funds for investors because the Fed brought interest rates down to zero. So if you were retired, what the heck did you do for income? Because back in the year 2000, you could have got 7 and 8%. When the Fed brought interest rates down to zero, you got maybe a quarter of a percent or a half a percent at the bank. You got nothing on your money market funds. So all of this money that was seeking a return, because when you're retired, what do you need? You need income. And most people have just Social Security. A lot of people that worked in the private sector don't have defined benefit pension plans. All they have is what they had in their 401k or personal savings, and they were looking for a stream of income. So the money went into bond funds. Then we saw what happened in 2013 when the Fed first announced taper. The long bond doubled in yield and bond funds lost double digits that year. But between 2014 and 2016, money came back into the bond funds, except for recently, in the last couple months of this new year, money has been gradually moving over into stock funds. The reason is because we saw interest rates almost double from the summer of last year, where we had a great bond market rally in the first half of the year that accelerated with Brexit, when we actually saw negative interest rates across the globe. It was probably the lowest interest rate period that we've ever seen in human history. So that was a great bond market rally, but that completely changed in the second half of the year, where all those gains were given up. And in fact, depending on your bond fund, you actually lost money. What's amazing to me, since 2009, the stock market is up 275%. The public went into bonds, but the greatest return was in the stock market.
Okay, but if the public was going into bonds, which will predicate that that's what happened, what drove the stock market up?
The main buyers of the stock market, powering the stock market from 2009, has been sovereign wealth funds and corporations buying back their stock. Companies have been pouring nearly a half a trillion dollars into the stock market, buying back their own stock. There weren't a lot of great growth opportunities. Economic growth was anemic. So the best place to put all that cash that these companies were earning was buying back stock. So it hasn't been individual investors that have driven the market. It has been institutions, mainly companies and sovereign wealth funds of these large central banks.
You know, and this move, by the way, is understandable. You can understand why retirees were going into bond funds. I mean, we'd had two bear markets. Look at that. And they needed a steady source of income. So what did you do in that time?
Well, I mean, that's primarily why we saw this big shift into bond funds, not only was that based on the severe losses of two bear markets 5 years apart from each other, but also the Fed brought interest rates down to zero. So if you're retired and all you have to live on is Social Security or whatever you had in your 401k program, people began to use bond funds just like they were like CDs, because it was the only place left, John, that you could get a decent yield, even though many times they were only 2 or 3%. That was certainly better than 0%, which is what you were getting on money market funds, or maybe 0.5% on banks. But the problem that you have now is the bond bull market is over, in our opinion, and an opinion of many of the experts that we've had on the weekend program. And the Fed is in a rate raising cycle. So investors just have no idea the amount of risk they are taking in the bond markets, because the last bond bear market ended in August of 1981. So for most boomers or people in bond funds today, all they've experienced in the last 3 decades is falling interest rates. They have no idea what it's like, for example, in the middle of the 1950s, all the way up to 1981, where you had 30 years of rising interest rates. We're about 2 years into this Fed tightening process. The Atlanta Fed shadow funds rate bottomed in May of 2014, and it's been going up since then. So we're only at the very beginning of this rate raising cycle, which will probably last the entire period of retirement for most baby boomers going forward over the next couple of decades.
So outside rising interest rates, then, this would drive down bond prices. But what other risks are you seeing as you look out there?
Unfortunately, when people are shopping around for bond funds, John, they buy the bond fund that has the highest yield. So let's say you're looking at 3 bond funds. One bond fund pays 4%, the other one pays 3.5%, and then the third one pays only 3%. Well, most people are shopping are saying, well, if I'm going to put $100,000 into a bond fund and this one pays 4%, I'll get $4,000 versus the one that's only paying 3%, which would only give me $3,000. What they don't understand is, why is one bond fund paying 4 and the other one's paying 3? It all has to do with the risk that the bond fund is taking. And the higher interest rate is associated with greater risk. But that's what investors aren't looking at. And the reason the higher yield that you're seeing that bond fund has to do with 3 things. Either 1, they're buying lower quality bonds instead of AAA or investment grade bonds. They may buy lower quality bonds as much as junk bonds or bonds with a lower credit quality. And that's always a risk if you go into recession. 2, they may be investing in bond funds that actually use leverage, where they actually go out and borrow money. For example, when interest rates were close to 0, if you were a bond fund, you could go out and borrow money at 0.5% to 1% and then buy bonds that were paying 3%. So that leverage allowed you to increase the yield in the bond fund. Or they were buying less liquid bonds. And I want to get to this because this is a very important story with some recent SEC rules that are affecting bond funds in terms of disclosure.
Yeah, and it's obvious here that there is a reason why people are getting higher yield, and that's because they're taking bigger risks, but I'm not sure that they're aware that that's what's happening.
No, they're just saying, you know, it's like looking at a car. This car can go from 0 to 60 at a faster speed than this other car. So they're going with the funds where they're going to get a higher rate of return. And as a result of this, 3 risks here. There's duration risk, there's lower quality risk, there's leverage risk, there's the risk of the bonds that the fund buys is less liquid. And because everybody's been searching for yield in this negative and low interest rate environment that we've been in here since the economic recovery began 8 years ago. So people are sort of stretching for yield. And recently, the SEC basically passed some rules on these bond funds, because a lot of these bonds that are being bought by these bond funds are illiquid, meaning that if people wanted their money out of the bond funds, the bond fund may not be able to liquidate the bonds that they own. And so there's categories that the SEC is now requiring in terms of liquidity. In other words, if you buy a stock, you get your money in 3 days. If you buy a real liquid bond, you would get your money in 3 days. So there's 6 categories of liquidity, 1 to 3 years, 4 to 7, 8 to 15, 16 to 30, or 30 days plus, meaning that if we see a sharp spike in interest rates like we did in 2013, or from November of last year to the end of the year, and people want their money out of a bond fund, it's going to force that bond fund to sell their bonds. And when you have illiquid bonds, you have to liquidate those bonds. It may take longer to get the money. And secondly, you may have to sell those bonds at severe losses. And so that's really what's important. In fact, there was an article that was done by the Wall Street Journal folks on this very same thing ahead of the SEC rules. In many of the nation's highest and most popular bond funds, because of their yield, are some of the funds that are most liquid. For example, the Vanguard High Yield Corporate Bond Fund, 40% of their holdings, they would have trouble liquidating within a 7-day period. You take a look at American Funds, American High Income Trust, almost 39%. Vanguard's long-term investment grade bond, 39% of the bonds in that portfolio could not be liquidated in a 7-day period. Vanguard short term, 28%. Some of the other Vanguard intermediate term, 18%. So a lot of these funds, John, they're sitting on bonds that if people wanted their money back, and that's one of the reasons why there are going to be some blue rules that are going to be put into place that is going to give the mutual fund company the ability to basically stop liquidity. They can just say, hey, sorry, under this market, you can't get your money because the bonds we own, we couldn't liquidate. It would be the same thing like a bank that got in trouble. You went to get your money out of the bank, and the bank said the bank shuts its doors temporarily. That possibility exists for some of these bond funds going forward. And that's why it's important. And we've seen several periods of time, 2013, from the summer, May of 2013 to the end of the year, when interest rates doubled, that was a period where a lot of investors in bond funds lost double digits. And then last year, beginning in September to December, when we saw the 10-year Treasury note go from 1.3% in June all the way to 2.6% at the end of the year. So in the first part of the year, if you were in a bond fund, you probably made double-digit returns as interest rates got down to historical lows. But by the end of the year, you gave back all those gains. And depending on the bond fund you're in, you actually walked away at the end of the year with losses. So it's really something that I think we want to really warn investors, just as the SEC is trying to get more disclosure on this lack of liquidity. Also, the SEC and a lot of these bond mutual fund companies and even ETFs are petitioning saying, hey, you know, when this day comes, we could be faced with a situation where we're not going to be able to sell the bonds we have in our portfolio. So we're going to temporarily shut our doors. You won't be able to get your money out in the short term. So this is something that I just think people aren't really realizing when they're looking at these bond funds. They're picking the one with the highest yield. They have no clue or idea at the amount of risk that they're taking until this really hits them when these events unfold.
Okay, well, given the fact that we are in the type of environment in which we find ourselves all the time here now, we're talking about Fed rate raising cycles. What are you doing with your clients to respond to it and to still generate income for them?
You've got to learn how to manage money differently in a rising rate cycle and an approaching bear market, because I believe that most boomers who are retiring will spend their entire lifetime in retirement in a bond bear market. And one of the first things that we do, John, which is really important, it's the same thing you do when you walk into a physician. What does a physician do when you go in for a doctor's visit? They take your blood pressure, they take your temperature. We do the same thing, but we do it through what is called a risk assessment score, where we have our client fill out a questionnaire, because what's one of the most important things is you need to know what that individual's tolerance is for risk. It's kind of like blood pressure. No doctor would take somebody with high blood pressure and put them in a high stress environment. Likewise, as advisors working with clients, you don't want to take somebody that has high blood pressure and put them in a high blood pressure environment with their investment portfolio. And we call that high blood pressure. We call it risk. So we go through a risk assessment profile, and you'll find that most individuals we find on a scale of 1 to 100, 100 being the most risky. Think of gold funds, think of commodity funds. The market risk profile is somewhere around 80. So you'll find most people, when they retire, they're probably in a 25 to 35 when it comes to risk. But what we find when we analyze their portfolios or their bond funds or whatever it is, their portfolio has a risk profile of 60, 70, and 80. And so there's a disconnect between that. And what usually gets their attention, and usually when we get calls, is when you go through these downdraft periods like we did in the summer of 2013 or in the last couple months of last year, where people lost a lot of money in their bond funds. So we're not going to put a client who has a low risk profile, which is generally most people that are heading into retirement, are retired, or at least close to retirement. So you want to take that kind of look at what people are actually doing. And that's why we use a different strategy. So the first thing is, what's the person's risk profile? And then what we're going to do is we're going to use, given the fact that we're in a rising rate cycle, what we do is we take a look at what is going on in the market. What is happening to risk spreads? For example, in the beginning of 2016, and everybody recalls what happened, the Fed raised interest rates for the first time in December 2015, and the market just went straight down 6 weeks in a row. Commodities hit a record low. Credit spreads, meaning the interest rate offered on corporate bonds and treasuries, just widened. Well, we used that opportunity to go in and buy bonds at steep discounts, and we were able to get individual bonds with short maturity. The best one we did, we made 10% income for a 12-month period of time. Now, the bond environment is much different. So we're using laddered bonds, meaning that we will use a portfolio of different bonds that mature every single year. So as interest rates rise, you can roll those bonds over into higher interest rates. A second thing that we're doing is we are doing interest rate floaters. And what happens is these are bonds that adjust their interest rates. Think of an adjustable rate mortgage. These are adjustable rate bonds, and they adjust every 6 months. So what we look for is a bond which is selling at below par, meaning like if the bond originally was issued at a dollar, we're looking for bonds we can buy at a discount, 80 cents, 70 cents, or 85 cents, who are going to be adjusting their interest rate up. And so when that happens, we can buy these bonds at a discount, which means we get a higher yield. But secondly, when they adjust their rates, which they do every 6 months, we get capital appreciation and a higher interest rate. So we're using interest rate floaters. And the other thing that we're doing is we are using some bond funds that are unique because of the way they're managed. They're actively managed bond funds that have an international scope, so they can shop the world. They have short duration, meaning they're holding short-term bonds, so there's less interest rate risk. But more importantly, they're active, and their beta, meaning how much they fluctuate, is low.
Overall, then, how would you contrast that to what's going on in the industry?
Typically in the industry today, a lot of people have these software programs, and you get what is called a pie chart allocation. You come in, you give somebody $100,000, they're going to put X amount in small cap funds, they're going to put some in large cap, they're going to put some in bond funds, and then they just kind of stationary. That's not very active. And we don't like that approach. We like individual bonds where we can take advantage of what's going on in the marketplace. And where we do use bond funds, we use bond funds that have a lower risk profile. These bond funds have ratings. Most people are buying bond funds that have a risk between 60 to probably 80, and they don't realize the kind of risk that they're taking, where the kind of bond funds that we're using have a risk profile of 10 to 20. So, and that's based on these managers who have a reputation for this. So we're going to use a combination of three or four things. We're going to use individual bonds, short-term and laddered. We're going to use interest rate floaters, meaning that as interest rates rise, the income from these bonds actually goes up. And that also raises the value of the bond and maintains its value. And then we will use specialized bond funds that have a unique reach that is global. So we're going to use a combination of all of these. Once again, a lot of this is going to depend on an individual's risk assessment. And a lot of people, John, quite honestly, get very surprised when we say, okay, you went through our risk profile. So let's just call that. We took your blood pressure and your temperature, and you're at 25. However, your portfolio, the things that you own, you'll see that in the case study that we are going to talk about here shortly. The stuff that you own is completely much different than what it is in your risk profile. And that's why we want to raise this alert now, because there's a lot of risk lurking out there in a lot of these bond funds for lack of liquidity, long-term bonds that could fall in value as rates rise, or lower quality bonds that could be in trouble as we head into a recession, which I think will happen probably sometime the end of next year or 2019.
Well, we are in a Fed rate raising cycle. We know there are more to come. They have promised us that. What that means with rising rates is that bond prices are going to be falling and you're going to lose money.
Well, I guess that's probably the easiest way to say it. But I think more importantly, and especially if you're a boomer, let's say you're 65 and you're retiring, between you and your wife, you could probably spend 25 to 30 years in retirement. Your retirement years are going to be spent in a bear market cycle. Usually bond cycles last anywhere from 25 to 35 years. The bull market in bonds lasted 36 years. We have now begun a bear market in bonds, meaning that if you listen to the weekend show where I had Dan Robtrobsky on, he was talking about we're going to see probably in the next 12 months that the 10-year treasury note, which is currently around 2.4, head up to over 3%. So the 36-year bond bull market, in my opinion, has ended. And investors, John, are just not prepared for that. They're shopping for yield. They're not looking at risk. They don't understand what duration is, which is how much subject the bonds in the portfolio are to interest rate risk. They're not familiar with liquidity risk or the credit risk that the bond funds are taking. And you need to manage bond funds differently going forward, because not all bond funds are created equal. There are things that separate, and your first clue is if you're shopping or you own a bond fund and you picked it because it had its highest yield, I would strongly suggest you start looking at what they own and how liquid their bonds are, because unless you understand the risk you're exposed to, you could get into some serious trouble.
Well, we've had a few glitches too. I mean, remember we had the taper tantrum and people lost money during that. Last year with the stock market rally, the Trump rally as it was called, of course that affected bonds too, and people again lost money.
Yeah, and it's just something that people aren't expecting. Just giving an example, you know, one of Franklin's, and I'm not picking on Franklin, I could pick on Vanguard as well, but they had a very popular income fund. It's down 19%. The one you really got to watch out for is these mutual funds or ETFs that use borrowed money. And when they use borrowed money, when interest rates rise, what does that mean? They borrowed money short term. And the reason they do that is if I can borrow at 1% and buy a bond at 3%, I'm making a 2% profit difference. So I could raise the yield on the portfolio. The problem is when interest rates start rising, I mean, think of 3-month treasury bills as a good example. Last summer, they were negative, meaning if you bought a T-bill, you actually lost money to the government, you paid them to borrow. Today, 3-month T-bills are at 0.75%. So these bond funds that have lost money or borrowed money to increase the yield, when interest rates go up, their costs go up and they can drop more. So like you have, for example, there's a high income fund by Nuveen. It's down about 16%. You have another fund. This is a Nuveen fund. It's a municipal bond fund. It's down about 12%. So imagine what it would be like to be receiving income, but every single year you lose your principal. And this is something that you have to watch out for. And I think one of the reasons why we haven't seen this outflow of bonds yet is, number one, people are still dependent on income. Even though the Fed is raising interest rates, People are living off bond funds because they need to get income to supplement what they're getting from Social Security, but they have no idea the risk that they're taking here. And I think because in 2013, the losses took place in a 6-month period. In 2014, you know, bonds went back up in value from 2014 to the first part of 2016. But in the second half of 2016, all the gains of the first half of the year evaporated, and many of those funds ended up with losses or negative or even for the year. So that's why, John, I think you have to really understand that not all bond funds are created equal. If you're getting that high rate of return, you better understand why it is you're getting that high rate of return and what's going to happen to you if rates continue to rise, because the Fed has already told us there's probably another rate hike coming in probably May or June, and probably another one at the end of the year and more coming into next year, where we could see the Fed funds rate up to close to 2%. But I think by the time it gets up to 2% or 2.25%, we're going to be heading into a recession, which is a big risk for a lot of you that have invested in these high yield bond funds, which can go down precipitously if we start heading into a recession.
What I want to do here, in line with what you're saying, Jim, is play a clip of Ralph Acampora, who was addressing this and what happens when these investors suddenly realize that they can lose money.
We've got the market up a couple 100% since the bottom of 2009. At what point do you think that's the final phase of the market, when Mrs. Smith looks at her monthly statement and says, oh my God, I'm really losing money in my bonds here? Is that where we get the capitulation phase, kind of like what we saw from 1995 to, let's say, 2000, when the public just went full bore into the market?
Yes, that's what you'll see. But I don't think the elements are in place for that yet, because rates have to go out a lot higher, and she has to really start seeing those paper losses, well, the real losses, and her bond funds. I think that's down the road a piece. But on a very short-term basis, what we're seeing now is accelerated prices, and you could get a blow-off right here, and call it the Trump blow-off. So, you know, I've had an outstanding target for the Dow of 22,000. We just crossed 21,000 today. It looks like we're going to hit 22,000 very, very quickly. I have to go somewhat to push it a little bit higher on the Dow. So I'm starting to see that we're getting a little lofty. I'm not throwing in the towel yet on this rally, but you know what? Keep looking at the sentiment indicators, the weekly bull bear numbers. When they start getting up to around 75%, then there's your excessive optimism.
Once again, Ralph Acampora basically saying boomers are going to be spending their retirement years in a bond bear market. So that's almost like one of those caveat emptor type of situations. Now, I would remind you that tomorrow on the program, Paul Horn's going to be our guest right now. We'll be addressing the subject of 401ks. And right now it's time for our real life case study based on the lives of real people whose names have been changed to protect their privacy. So who are we talking about this week, Jim?
This week, our case study is Amber Sharp, and this is the case, not all bond funds are created equal. She was 64. She hopes to retire within 1 to 2 years. Her life expectancy, given family history and health, is about age 95. She was moderately conservative. Her main goals were capital preservation, which you're going to find interesting, because what her goals in her conservatism, her risk profile was very, very conservative. Her investment profile was very aggressive. There was a sharp difference between her ability to assume risk, and especially given the fact that she wanted to retire within 1 to 2 years, versus what was invested or the way she had her portfolio invested. Now, she was basically a project manager. She's worked for the same company for many years, and she is hoping to retire in the next couple of years. She's developed and becoming into a conservative investor, especially after she lost half her net worth in the financial crisis between 2007 and 2009, which is one of the reasons that a lot of boomers, as a result of losing so much money in the stock market, and given the fact that you went through two bear markets within a 5-year period of time, what she did is she thought she was being conservative by investing in bond funds and closed-end funds for income, because she was thinking, okay, I'm going to retire here in the next decade. This is going back to 2009. I don't want to go through this again. So she pulled her money out of the market And so she missed a lot of the upturn that we saw in stocks over the last 9 years, but she went into bond funds. Basically, her philosophy was much different because she chose funds based on the funds that paid the highest yield with little understanding the implications of those investments. And so when she came to us, she was looking at that and she basically said, you know, how do I look? Am I going to be okay? Am I going to be able to retire? And what we did is we put her through a risk profile. And as she thought she was very, very conservative. She came out somewhere between, I think her risk profile rating was somewhere around 23, 24, which is what most people are generally when you head into retirement or a few years away from there. And so she wanted to take a look at retiring in the next couple of years, wanted to make sure that she was basically going to be okay. So on a risk profile, she was a 3. When we took a look at her portfolio on a risk scale, it was a 7. So there was this cavernous difference between her own ability to assume risk and the way she was actually invested. And for many of you that have been in bond funds, that have been in high yield funds, junk bond funds, illiquid funds, everything has probably looked okay between 2014 and the first part of 2016. Certainly didn't look that way towards the end of the year or in the last half of 2013. So what was important to Amber? And probably many of you that are listening, getting ready to retire. She wanted to be able to maintain her lifestyle. And according to maintaining that lifestyle, she wanted to make sure she had sufficient income, which was another reason she had shifted into bond funds after the financial crisis. And she wanted to do, she's part of this group of friends, and they take cruises, and she wanted to be able to do more travel. And so the other thing was, okay, I'm getting ready to retire. How do I look? Am I invested appropriately? And I think one of the biggest shocks that came to Amber, this whole time she thought she was invested conservatively because she wasn't primarily in the stock market. What she didn't realize is she was in leveraged in high yield junk bond funds. And it was, you know, like many people shopping, she was shopping for the best return. In other words, the highest income. But she didn't realize what was behind that highest income was one of the funds used a lot of leverage. The other fund was just basically low credit quality, which is okay as long as the economy is doing well. It's not okay if the economy starts to downshift like it did in 2011. Looking at Amber's budget, essential budget, $62,000, discretionary $25,000, so spending $87,000. Her salary was $98,000, so she had a surplus of about $11,000 a year. The difference between what she would do in retirement, basically, essential budgets would probably go up. She was actually increasing money. So her budget wouldn't really decrease that much. It would go from $87,000 to $84,000. And mainly a lot of that had to do with travel, hobbies. I mean, that's what usually what happens when you retire. Her income, Social Security, would be roughly $35,000 a year. Her pension would be $17,000. A shortfall of $32,000, that would have to be made up with her investments, which is another reason why she went into bond funds. Her residence, roughly about $530,000. Her retirement account was $375,000. Her taxable investments were $651,000. Her Roth IRA was $150,000, and she kept $60,000 with one of the local banks. So investment assets, roughly about a little over $1.2 million. Total assets, $1.7 million, including the house. One of the things that we did going through the plan is we pointed out to her one of the reasons her income was so high, she was taking excessive risk in the current portfolio based on the kind of bond funds that she had. She mainly had leveraged funds in high yield bond funds, which was why she was getting the higher yield. We took a look at expenses and we said, look, you know, some of this might have to be modified because there's no way I would want you to remain in a junk bond fund, especially if, you know, by the time you retire, we could be in a recession. And these kind of funds, and especially those that are leveraged with the Fed raising interest rates, she would be hit pretty hard. So there was a lot of risk that was created. And what we did is we put her in our balanced account, which was individual bonds, interest rate floaters, laddered bonds, couple bond funds with lower income, but much lower risk. The net result is her income would be roughly about $89,000, less her budget of $84,000. She would have a surplus of $4,500, but her risk would go from where it was on a 7, we would bring the risk profile of the portfolio back down to 3 and 4, which is more in alignment of her own basically ability to assume risk. So what we did is we updated the asset allocation to reflect a more balanced portfolio with less risk. And in order to maximize income, we incorporated some dividend producing stocks, type of companies you could sleep with at night. We also introduced an individual laddered bond portfolio with maturities because we said, look, one of the good things about laddered bonds, as the Fed raises interest rates, as these bonds mature, you can invest them at a higher rate of interest. So your income is actually going to be going up as the Fed raises interest rates, and you don't have to worry about loss of principal, because if you buy a bond, you put $10,000, it matures in 3 years, you get your $10,000 back. We also recommended that she develop a budget that could be closely monitored, because remember, we only had a surplus of about $5,000 with this portfolio. And one of the reasons was we were getting her out of leveraged bond funds in junk bond funds, which paid a higher rate of interest. But already she was losing money in the principal in some of these funds as a result of the Fed raising interest rates. In good years, we told her the budget needs to be monitored based on what's happening with interest rates and also what's going to happen in the market. And folks, this is very crucial in the first years of retirement, because you cannot afford to suffer a huge drawdown. Imagine if you retired in 2007 and you were fully invested in stocks. In the next 2 years, you saw your portfolio drop in half as Amber did. That is something you do not want to go through if you begin your retirement. So we said we need to monitor this, because there's going to be a period of time, and you know, I don't know what the timing will be, but I told her, I said, we're not fully invested in stocks right now. We're increasing our bond positions and also some cash, and we're taking some profits off the table, because we know the Fed is going to keep raising rates, which will hurt bond funds, number one, in the way she was invested prior to seeing us. And number two, eventually they're going to raise rates and we're going to be in a recession. And in a recession, the stock market will be in a bear market as well. So we basically said, look, in the good years, take more expensive trips. In the down years, we need to limit the amount of traveling because we need to be conservative to protect capital. So our strategy was to make sure that Amber was utilizing proper portfolio and also that she had proper health insurance, especially since she'd be applying for Medicare. We want to make sure that she had the right Medigap insurance and also that her assets would be managed in a way so she would not have to suffer a sequence and risk, because we know what the Fed always does is, if you listen to the weekend programs, they keep raising interest rates until they finally break something. And so luckily, you know, she's no longer invested in junk bonds or invested in bond funds that use a lot of leverage.
And coming up tomorrow on the program, Paul Horn, our guest for the show, and we will be discussing 401ks, which, of course, are a very important part of retirement.
So that ends this week's Lifetime Income. Folks, really, I can't emphasize this with the majority of Americans heading into retirement or retired, invest in bond funds. Please do yourself a favor, investigate the bond funds that you own and really know the risks that you are taking, especially in a rising interest rate environment. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.